think one of these days we're going to have to get a bigger hall. Oh, I've got to give much worse talks. One of the two. Okay. Most people have found a way in. And still, people can come in at any old time, because I always say that religious people, especially monks, should be the hardest people to offend. So always very peaceful and happy no matter what. And that's actually the subject of this evening's talk. I wanted to make the difference between happiness and peace. So, you know, our goals in life, what are we aiming for? And in this talk, by making a difference between what happiness means and what peace is, you can make your choice what you wish for. And I think you'll find, I hope, if I make the case according to as it should be made, that peace is the highest happiness. That's a saying which I heard in the monasteries in Thailand when I was a young monk, that peace is the highest happiness. What do we mean by that? Ah, I don't know, these days I was travelling again, going over to Sydney last weekend, giving some talks, and at the airport, just because the plane was delayed as usual, I'm getting used to this, but you get there in the end. I'm looking in the bookshop, and there's a lot of books in the self-help section on happiness, and it's almost like an industry now, some of the magazines say. And when I was in Sydney last October at a conference, there's even like happiness institutes, where the manager or the boss, he calls himself not the CEO, the CHO, the chief happiness officer. It's crazy. So much so that happiness becomes like a commodity, which especially in New Age or religious organization, we promote as an important thing, which, if you like, that we provide in places like this. But as many other commentators have pointed out, that sometimes that creates a lot of stress in people's life. They make themselves sick trying to be so damn happy. And they get very disappointed when they're not. And so we have to be careful here to understand what we're actually aiming for, you know, in life. You know, is it really happiness which we really want, or is that sometimes a little bit off the mark, and it's something different which we should go for? Because look about it, you know, your life. I mean, what do people do, you know, when they aim for their goals in life? They want to become wealthy because they think once they're wealthy, they're going to be happy. Find a nice partner and then you'll be happy. Sort of be able to retire when you're 50. Then you'll be happy. And you all know I retired when I was 23. That's really smart. But then they say, well, you've got no superannuation. Who needs superannuation when you've got meditation? They call it super meditation. Which will keep you happy, and you can, an inexhaustible supply of spiritual cash to keep you happy and at peace for the rest of your life. But even more than that, because superannuation only lasts till your death. But the peace and happiness of super meditation, that lasts beyond your death. And no treasure of this country can take that away from you. But anyway, going back to sort of happiness, what is the happiness which people find in life? A lot of times people say maybe the best part of happiness is like falling in love. Have you ever felt falling in love? How many times have you fallen in love? You ever notice when you fall in love, you have to fall out of love again? It's called, you know, impermanence, rise and fall. It always happens. That's why one of my favorite sayings, I only read this about 6 months ago, because, you know, my favorite sayings, they're just a twist on the normal saying. And that's why I love these. It's better to have loved and lost than never to have lost at all. Because I usually say, because it's, I think, Shakespeare, if I'm not mistaken, it's better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all. But now love, it's easy to love. But how about losing? It's better to have loved and lost than never to have lost at all. Because you know what happens when people are winners? So they haven't got an understanding of what real life truly is. Sometimes when everything goes well in your life, you haven't got much wisdom and you don't know what peace truly is. You get an illusion that this life is a wonderful place and you can control it and make it be whatever you like. That's the trouble of successful people. They're in the illusion that they have created their success. And they think, wow, what a great person I am. And everyone else are losers. Has anyone else ever called you a loser? Please call me a loser. Because I love losing. It's much more fun losing. So that's why I say to people when they're kids, because sometimes you have these youth who come to our youth groups, they say, look, when you have your examinations, you know, it's great to fail your examinations. Because if you don't fail your examinations and you pass, you have to take another one next year. And you have to keep on doing the exam until you eventually do fail. And then you can actually stop. If only I'd known that when I was young, because you know, I had to do the AO levels, and you pass those, then you have to do A levels, then you have to do university, and then if you want to do postgraduate MAs and stuff. Gee, it was wonderful. If I'd only learned how to fail early on in my life, I could have been a much more peaceful person. Do you know what I mean? Sometimes we're so afraid of failure that we don't know how to fail. And that creates a huge amount of personal pressure, a lack of self-esteem, a feeling of inadequacy, a feeling of being judged by other people. And I think it's great to learn from that, because you learn much more from the failures in life than you ever do. Maybe, I said the other way around, I think a few weeks ago, from actually winning. So that's why I think it's great to be a loser. Look at me. I've lost everything. I used to have these great degrees, and I've lost them. You know what I did with those degrees? When I first went home to visit my mother, you know, she had them. My BA, my MA. And I thought, I'm a monk, I don't need these. I tore them up and threw them in the dustbin. And I thought that was a wonderful thing to do. Until, an hour later, I saw my mother patiently taping them together with sellotape on the kitchen table. I felt terrible when I saw that. And I realized they weren't my degrees, they were hers. Because they were her son, she was proud of me. But for me, it was okay to lose these things. And then, you know, you lose, you know, your girlfriends. I'll tell you, it's great to lose your girlfriends. You're free, you can go wherever you want, do whatever you want. Or you lose your boyfriends. When you got the boyfriend, I mean, what happens? You know, you've got to sort of work so hard to please him and put on the makeup up and dress up and be nice and be, oh, just a waste of time. Just think how you're free when you lose things. Look about losing your wealth, like I did. You know, give it all up. It's amazing. The less you have, the more free you feel. People think it's the other way around. The more you have, the more control you have in life. But that's a delusion. You're not in control. You should know that very early on in life. So the more you let go, the more freedom you have. The more you lose, the more peaceful you are. And eventually you have to lose anyway. I mean, most of you here, look around you. You know, you've lost your youth already. Come on, admit it. Where did that go? So you're all losers. Maybe it's us. I heard that baby in the back. Okay, you're still young, but... Now, you lost your good looks. It's such a struggle to make yourself look good anymore. And if you lost your agility, and I saw you walking in here struggling... You're losing your health. You're losing your vigor. Isn't that a wonderful thing to do? Because, you know, being an adolescent, you know, there's so much pressure and struggle on you. Kids especially, you know, having to look beautiful, or having to be smart. You know, you remember what it felt like to be like that? That's one of the old jokes. I'll put this one in here. About when you're in your 20s. When you're in your 20s, you know, you have to dress up, you have to be smart, you have to have street cred or whatever they call it. You're so worried what other people think of you when you're in your 20s. That's why you have to have your image, you have to make up, you have to wear good clothes. But when you're in your 40s, then you get self-confidence. You couldn't give a damn what other people think of you. Just do it. And when you're in your 60s, you finally find out that people weren't thinking about you anyway. If you could only learn that from the beginning, then you'd have much more freedom of worrying about what other people think of you. Which actually creates a lot of problems, psychological problems for people. Always trying to gain acceptance, respect from other people. They're mostly thinking about themselves, not you. I'm being truthful here. So anyway, it's great being a loser. I've lost all of my power to do things. I can't have sex. I can't go to the movies. So many things I can't do. I've lost my freedom being a monk. That was such a wonderful time. And eventually you lose your health. Eventually you lose your life. You die. So in the end, we're all losers. So I say, what's wrong with being losers? I'm starting a new organization. Losers' Rights. Equity for losers. Don't discriminate against losers. I'll start a losers' society. What I'm saying over here is that sometimes we can look at things in a different way and get far more wisdom out of these things, because if we don't know what it's like to fail, to lose, to be disappointed, we never get any wisdom about what life truly is. When things go well for you in life, you know, you just think that life is just happiness. But that's not what life truly is. Life is what goes wrong. That's the real life. And sooner or later that happens for each one of us. Sooner or later we come across situations which are just so painful and hard to bear. So it seems at first. Situations which are desperate. Whether it's our children run away and misbehave and get on drugs. Whether we've got a person at work who's a bully. Whether we've got diseases inside our body which is causing us great pain. Whether we're losing our business, someone is cheating us. Whether it's our partner is cheating on us. There are times in life when everything goes all wrong, big time. When you lose, what do most people do? It's incredible just how so many people react to the losses of life with a sense of guilt. With a sense that it's their fault. That they have somehow done something wrong to deserve that pain. Sometimes we take responsibility for the wrong things in life. Really what's happening here, this is life. This is what life actually is. Always has been this way, always will be this way. And it's nothing wrong with you. And that's why we have therapy groups. Therapy groups, we just have people who are experiencing similar traumas, and they come together and they talk to each other, and then we recognize in somebody else's pain, our own pain, their situation, my situation, we feel the same. We feel that we're not alone, but it's more than not being alone in our pain, in our grief, in our troubles. So just this afternoon I was at a grief conference, cracking jokes. I love cracking jokes at grief conferences. Good grief. You just change it all around. But when these things happen, we have these groups which come together, because when we actually listen to other people going through exactly what we're going through, one of the great advantages of that, it means that there's nothing wrong with us. This is normal. This is par for the course. It happens to others. It happens to me. We realize this is life. That cancer groups, that cancer is part of life. It's not a mistake that something as terrible has gone wrong. We understand just how to accept life instead of fighting life, which is what losing is all about, the message of losing. The purpose of it is to understand that we're not in control. We didn't lose. It's just life. It's like this. Sometimes we win, sometimes we lose. Part of life. I sometimes read in the back pages of the newspaper all these sports.
And I mention this about losing because apparently the West Coast Eagles and the Fremantle Dockers are somewhere in the bottom of the league. It's wonderful that they're like that. Because I'm adapting a story in my book, because we have something in Buddhism, and there's a very important concept in Buddhism of the Bodhisattva. You know what a Bodhisattva is? It's a person who sacrifices their own happiness for the sake of other beings. Someone who's so compassionate that they will take the bottom place of the ladder so all the other teams won't have to experience the same suffering as they're taking. So I think the West Coast Eagles and the Fremantle Dockers this year are the most compassionate teams. They are truly Buddhist. By letting the other people win, because that's what makes them happy, while the Fremantle Dockers and the West Coast Eagles can be just so peaceful and kind and gentle. If the other team wants the ball, you can have it. So true Buddhist, I think my teachings have finally got into Subiaco Oval. which is where those teams play in Perth. But getting more down to the point, we learn something from the losing streaks of life, from the pain and disappointments of life. Even though sometimes, you know, the young kids, they come up to me, because I know some of these kids, you know, they've grown up with me, I'm almost like their uncle. And they tell me things they never tell their parents, and I won't tell their parents either, it's in confidence, you know, all their sort of social life and what goes on. Every now and again, the kid comes up and they've broken their heart. You know what it's like, you know, 16, 17, 18 year old or 20 year old, the first time, they've had a beautiful love affair and it doesn't work out. And they go crying. And I tell them, look, if you don't know what pain is, now I mean talking about not physical pain like a toothache, but you know, pain in the heart, a great disappointment, where all your life falls apart. How you ever learn to know what love is? If you don't know the opposite, if you don't know light, you can never know dark. If you don't know sort of the pain of the heart, you never know the joys of the heart. You don't know what peace is if you don't know what agitation is. So when I tell them that, I say there is a purpose to all these things, the pain in life. It's learning about what real love is, what real peace is. There is disappointments. One of the things, because there's a lot of psychologists, which I know over in Sydney, and over here as well. You know, Buddhism is really actually pushing along psychology in our modern world. So much so, there's the Australian Association of Buddhist Counselors and Psychotherapists, which I belong to. Not because I'm a psychologist or a psychotherapist, because I'm a Buddhist and in Australia. But you help a lot of these people. And I remember just the last time I gave a talk at their conference, they were talking about the pain which like a counselor or a doctor or a psychotherapist or any nurse or any sort of person who is in that caring profession has when they come across somebody who cannot be cured, who's got a disease or a sickness which actually resists all treatment, or they just don't allow the treatment. And he said there's nothing more sort of painful sometimes for them than seeing someone who they can't help. And they asked me, you know, as a monk, as a teacher, what would you do in that situation? Where there's a person who's in a psychological mess, a painful physical mess because of some disease, or in an emotional mess, and they refuse or they just cannot be helped. My answer was, look, that's not correct, that they cannot be helped. They cannot be cured. In other words, you can't take them into some idea of physical health. But they can always be cared for. And there's a huge difference there between taking a person and getting rid of their cancer and getting them to some idea of good health, or getting a person with an emotional distress and getting them back to a what we call a normal state of affairs. That's called healing. And there's another thing which is called caring. Which even though you cannot change what they are, you can just accept who they are. You can care for them. and to tell them, as I say in my book, the door of my heart is open to you, even though you are like this. That's a beautiful thing to do. Because if you can separate out caring from healing, loving from changing, you have a huge amount of wisdom and another resource to use in times when you see someone in great pain, stress, difficulty, and you feel impotent. You do not need to feel impotent. There's always something you can do. Not to change them, but to care for them. When you know how to do that, there's a huge amount which we can do for the difficulties of life. But some of the troubles with our problems in life, we always want to change it and make it different. And sometimes when we want to change and make it different, we really desperately want to heal that person. Too often we make it worse. To understand what we mean by the difference between happiness and peace, sometimes we have to allow unhappiness to be. And not to make everything nice and rosy and wonderful and great and brilliant and solve all the problems in the world. Because there's some problems in the world which just will not be solved. What can you do about those? One of the great stories, which I read a long time ago, and it's one of the great little philosophical stories in that book, Open the Door of Your Heart. And I mention this many times, because it is powerful, and it just, sometimes you read these things, like, wow, this really is deep, and it changes much of the way which I deal with life. This is practical wisdom, but tell it in a story, make it a little bit funny, and you remember it. And it's the story of that British ex-Prime Minister, Harold Macmillan, who had retired from office, but he was an elder statesman, and he was interviewed by the newspapers in 1967 during the Six-Day War between Israel against Egypt, Syria, Jordan, I forget who else, Lebanon, everything, every country around Israel was fighting in the Six-Day War. And he was asked, what do you think about the problem in the Middle East? Newspaper interview, this great British statesman. Without missing a beat, this ex-Prime Minister of Britain replied, "Sir, there is no problem in the Middle East." To which the reporter was stunned and responded, "What do you mean there is no problem in the Middle East? There's a war going on. You know, bullets, tank shells, people are dying. What do you mean there's no problem in the Middle East?" And quite calmly, this elder statesman said, "Sir, a problem is something with a solution. There is no solution in the Middle East. Therefore, it's not a problem." Now, that's a brilliant saying. Because there are many things in life with no solutions. At least, no solutions apparent right now. And too many people waste a lot of their energy and time. And they get themselves sick, worrying about things which they cannot change in this moment. Understandably so. Because some of these things, you know, your children getting into drugs, running away, wife playing around, husband sort of losing all the money down the casino, whatever it is going on. These are real problems. So what can you do about them? Sometimes we have to understand that some of these problems, we look at them, if there's something you can do, great, do something. But if there's nothing you can do, it's not a problem. It's out of control. So all you can do is to let go and be a loser. Be at peace with realizing this world is often beyond your control. But what you can always do is care for yourself and others. Sometimes you can't heal the problem. You can't fix it up. You can always care. Allow it to be. Rest. Conserve your energies. Keep your powder dry, as I used to say. And don't shoot when the enemy is out of range. What that really means is that when there's nothing to do, you don't drive yourself crazy by losing sleep, worrying. Why is it that people just cannot wait in these situations? Too often when there's a huge problem, we just get frantic. We think, worry. Instead of knowing there are some things which we just cannot solve, we have to let it go, wait until things change. I'm not going to tell the story about the soldier in the middle of the Burmese jungle. You can read that in that book. But the essence of that is life, the one thing you always know, that things do change. People aren't always the same. Relationships, they ebb and they flow. And life is always in flux. So when there's not a solution right now, it's not a problem. And a lot of times our difficulty, our thing is we don't know how to let things go and wait for an appropriate time to act. Just leave it for a while. Rest. There's not a problem. There's nothing to do. The best thing to do is to do nothing. In other words, make peace. Sometimes people only can make peace when everything is perfect, when all your problems are solved, when the world is okay, and when your finances is all fixed, your family life is all sweet, when your health is top range, and then we can be at peace. And our human being condition is always we work so hard trying to get to that magic place where everything is okay so we can rest, though we never reach that point. That's why the only time you find people resting in peace, where is that? You all know, in the cemetery. In our society, RIP only applies to dead people. And I rebelled against that. I want to rest in peace when I'm still alive, when I can still enjoy it. So how can you rest in peace in this life? The only way you can ever find peace is within imperfection. Because if you try for perfection, you never reach it, and you never find any peace at all in your life. So never think or never wait to say, when all my problems are solved, you know, when I've saved up enough money to retire, you know, when my legal problems are all fixed, you know, when my children come back home, you know, when my wife, you know, says sorry, which she should have done years ago, whatever else is worrying you. Never ever think that that is the only time you can find peace. One of the great teachings of the Buddha, what I learned for many years, is how you can find peace in the most unlikely of places. Amidst turmoil, amidst sickness, when everything is going wrong, you can't find happiness. But my goodness, you can always find peace. At any time, you can find this wonderful sense of acceptance when you can sit down, rest, and not try so damn hard to change the world. Let it be. This is why there are some occasions in your life where you have these glimpses of peace. And they're just so important to understand as an experience, not as a theory, what peace really is. How it's made, and how beautiful it is. And how it's almost your birthright as human beings, to discover that peace and learn how to rest in it and understand that even though the world may be just going completely bizarre and berserk and crazy, and you can find peace in any moment with any place. I still remember as a kid growing up in England, sometimes in those busy streets, those busy cities, those so noisy, I used to go into churches, even though I wasn't a Christian. I would still go into the church to sit because it was a quiet place. Especially those great cathedrals. I would love those cathedrals, not because of their architecture. I wasn't looking at the walls or the rafters. You know what I was looking at? It was the space. What was between those walls. Not all the ornaments which was decorating, you know, the shrine. I was looking at just the silence which was enclosed in those huge buildings. That's what really meant something to me, because they were huge, those cathedrals, the biggest buildings you'd ever seen. Before you had these huge banks and shopping malls. But the wonderful thing about those cathedrals, you go inside, and the noise of the traffic and the scurry of the people outside would never penetrate through those thick stone walls. Inside was silent. It was an oasis of peace in the turmoil of a major city. For me, that was a symbol. That was its spiritual heart, why they were there. A place of peace amidst this crazy imperfection of a modern city. But you know, the last time I went into a cathedral was into Westminster Abbey. And I was, oh, my heart sunk. Because instead of having the peace in those great churches and cathedrals, whoever was in charge, stupid I call them, they installed a PA system. And there was just a sermon going on 24 hours a day. Pipe music or announcements or sermons, and you could find no peace. Even though once, even over in the airports, even in Perth Airport, you know, there was supposed to be a meditation room, like a prayer room. I remember going there once, I thought, great, I can meditate instead of just hanging out in some lounge waiting for the aircraft to go. So I thought, great, I can go and find this quiet place to meditate. And I sat down there. Here is a security announcement. Please do not leave your bags unattended in the airport. We're paging from passenger so-and-so. Flight TT672 is about to leave. There's all these announcements in the prayer room. And I thought, gee, at least you can have one place for a bit of peace and quiet in an airport, but no way. And one of our problems in modern society is that it's so hard to find places of peace, places of silence. And when you find those places, they're magic. How many of you been in the bush? Hundreds of miles from anywhere. So distant from the nearest human being, as if the world has stopped. Maybe you don't have to go into the bush. Monastery down at Serpentine or at Dhammasara, sometimes if you go at times when there's not many people around, that is really calm. I don't know how many people, just even today, somebody came up and said they just love coming there. Not to see the monks, or to listen to, or to feed the monks, or listen to any Dhamma. Just to feel the peace. It's such a valuable thing. And I was telling them the story that, how many years ago? 27 years ago, just figuring it out. 27 years ago, after becoming a monk, 7 years in Thailand, I went to visit my family for the first time over in London. I just had a monastery just freshly bought in Sussex where I stayed. Only been established for a year and still there's so much building. It was a mess. No heating was there. And that was a very, very cold winter. That night, -26°C. We saw it in the newspapers afterwards, with the headlines. This is British newspapers. Even the beer froze. Very, very high quality newspapers in English. Nothing about the state of the world or people starving or wars going on. Headlines, even the beer froze. So much for culture. But I remember just getting up early in the morning, because I was an early riser, I was trained that way, and just going out and walking in the forest. It was so cold, I was wrapped up, it was so cold that nothing was moving. All the animals were in hibernation, And only crazy monks would get up at that time of the morning and actually walk in the snow. And that was amazing. I'll never forget that experience, because no one else was around in that forest. The snow had fallen overnight. There were no tracks of human or animal, and nothing stirred. There was no wind, so no leaf would rustle. No bush would move. When I stopped, the whole world stopped with me. It was so quiet, so peaceful. I think that was where I coined the word the sacred silence. Because it was something, I wouldn't call it moving, because that's the wrong word. It's the opposite of moving. Something which just grounded you and put you inwards. And that silence was just so beautiful. You just never wanted to disturb it once you got there. It was like a homecoming. It was like where you belonged. Where even in the difficulties of the world, you found this amazing place, what Ajahn Chah would call your real home of peace and silence. Always there when things stop moving. Peace at last. And that was so different than happiness. Happiness is what you create, what you make happen, because then you rejoice in it. Yeah, you won the lotto, you picked the right numbers, now you've worked hard and got the bonus, you've got an advancement in your career, and now your kids have managed to pass the TE and go to university, you've got your degree, your footy team has won. Whatever it is, the happinesses of the world, they're all from doing something. And this peace, it's like it's always there, but always avoided. It's always there when you stop moving and you stop doing things. My goodness, that's an incredibly powerful experience. And you don't have to make it happen. You don't have to search for it. It's not somewhere else. It's right here in this moment. When people find that peace, it's probably the best medicine in the world. Anyone who knows how to access that beautiful stillness knows how to have a healthy, happy, peaceful body. It's like your place of rest, when you can go into the peace at any time, even in the midst of turmoil and imperfection. You rest there for a while. Not for always. People make the mistakes. The Buddhists, yeah, they just sit meditation, watch their navel. Bloody good use for everybody else. That's not true. You rest in peace. Yeah, you get into deep meditations. So you can be so much more effective to help the world afterwards. This is your energy source, your power source. The place where you not only get your energy, your wisdom, your clarity, and your power, in the peace and stillness of the world, in your heart, anywhere. So when people understand what peace is and what happiness is, and you compare the two, what do you want? And the peace does come from losing things. When you're losing all movement, all wanting, all criticism, all judgments, you're losing all of that which drives your life. When you're allowing this moment to be, you're not changing the world, but you're being at one with the world, with all its faults. You just stay in that moment for a while. You stay in peace, and you'll never find that peace anywhere else than in the imperfections of ordinary daily life. In the forest, which is cold, in the bush, in the monastery, in the church, or just in your bedroom, when you just stop for a while, and let go, and allow things to cease. When that happens, you get this incredible peace, this ground, of your being, if you like. When you know that peace, you rest in it for a while. It gives perspective of what you do in life. And it's like a real home, a place where you go to rest, recharge your energies, see a meaning in life, and then you go out from that peace to go work your butt off to serve the world. To care for the world. Not always to heal it. Because sometimes you know that healing the world is an endless job. You go and help somebody, really help them, save their lives, and then someone else comes up tomorrow. Endless, just like working as a nurse or a doctor, or any other caring profession. I don't know how school teachers do it. You manage to teach kids, and they learn, and next year you've got to do it all over again, with another class, and another class, and another class, and another class, and another class. Endless, if you don't know what that meaning of life truly is. And that, for those of you who try meditating, I mean, please understand that the world of meditation, the world of real life, they go together. There's no difference, it's just doing the same things in two different areas. That's why I like our meditation, I call it like the laboratory, where you test things out, find what works, and you apply those skills in your ordinary daily life. Well, how many people try to meditate, and they try and make peace happen, rather than realize that peace is there when you stop messing around. And just leave it alone, and let it go. You are the one who makes all the noise. When you stop making noise, stop changing and moving things into what you think is perfection. Then you find peace. It's always been there. You're always looking somewhere else, anywhere else. When I can watch the breath, when I can get rid of my thoughts, when I can stop my sleepiness, when I can stop this and do this and perfect it all and make it all nice, then I can be peaceful. No, you're peaceful now. When I can get rid of the baby who's made a noise, kill the dogs next door, when check people, make sure they don't cough when they go into this room. You know, when I went to Singapore during the SARS crisis, they have this machine, this infrared machine, which can tell if you've got a fever. And people suggest we should get these here. And anyone who's got a high temperature, they're not allowed to come into this room because they will cough. And of course, you can't do that. If you try to do that, you're missing the whole point. Even if, you know, I'm not quite sure, I wasn't really paying attention to people, but I think when I started meditating, there was somebody snoring. Oh, it's okay, snore, that's okay, it's your problem, it's nothing to do with me. I'm just being peaceful. But if you think, no, can wake them up, why doesn't somebody wake them up? You know, they shouldn't allow people to snore in this place, I'm meditating. If you have no snorers, you should have a sign up there, no snorers, or we should get our meditation police with big peak hats and big batons, and anyone who snores, bang, that will teach you a lesson. We should be more strict. Because that's controlling, and you'll never find any peace that way. Because you'll never be able to create that type of silence in a meditation hall of 300 people. What you can find is peace in your heart. Even though you can't control the world, you can always let go. Even though you can't heal and make things absolutely perfect, you can always be kind. You'll be kind to this moment, you'll be kind to life, you'll be kind to all the sounds which come into your brain. You can be kind to all the feelings which are running through your body. You can be so kind that you open the door of your heart completely to life. You make peace with it. When you make peace, you find peace. It's beautiful stillness. Because you're not fighting the world doesn't move. If the world doesn't move, you're at peace. You stop. That's so important, the Grief and Loss Conference, because you are losers. Eventually you come to a point in your life when you lose everything. You are the Biggest Loser. That's the TV program, isn't it, The Biggest Loser? You know who the biggest losers are? The people who die. You one day will be the biggest loser. When you breathe your last. When you lose everything. You lose your family, you lose your home, you lose your car, you lose your cash. You lose all the fat in your body. When you're cremated, it all goes up in smoke. If you get buried, the worms eat it. You lose everything. So the biggest loser, in my book, are the people who are at the funeral parlours right now. How can you lose everything and be just so happy, or rather, so at peace? If you can do this now, in this life, to find that place of silence and stillness where nothing moves, the beautiful English forest, in the deepest of winters, when nothing moves, because even the animals are sleeping, and all the human beings are still asleep as well, and you go out there alone, and you stop crunching the snow, and you stand still for a moment, and you let go of the whole world, and everything stops. If you know what I mean by that, and you can do that, the time when you breathe your last, you're like in a place, the forest, where everything stops and sleeps, where nothing moves, and neither do you. If you don't move, you don't get reborn. The end of this wheel of rebirth. But if you move, even a little bit, then the whole thing starts all over again. You have to learn how to be still. Stillness. You know that wonderful phrase? The one phrase in the Christian Bible which I think joins it up with Buddhism. It's in the Psalms. You know, I'm ecumenical. I love, actually, you know, finding things from different religions. They're the wise teachings. You see that, if you look deeply, put all the rubbish aside, but there are sometimes great sayings. Be still, it said, and know that thou art God. What would that mean? God is like not a being, but a highest, brilliant, beautiful principle. Be still and know that you are at peace, real peace, full peace, ultimate peace. Peace is the highest happiness. And if the highest happiness, people give it a name, God, not a being, not a person, a principle, the highest happiness. If peace is the highest happiness, then maybe that's what that phrase actually means. Be still. I know that that's the highest happiness. But of course, that stillness, as I mentioned, most importantly, you use that as a place to stop, and while you're still alive, as a place where you get your power and energy from. Too many people solve their problems, or try to solve their problems, through thinking too much, or worrying too much. If you've got a big problem at work, or in your life, or in your health, and you go thinking about it, I've got cancer, I shouldn't have cancer, why have I got cancer, what am I going to do about this cancer, I'm going to fight it, but I shouldn't fight it, that's too aggressive, that gets make me stressed out more and more. How many times have you lost sleep thinking about your problems? And have you ever found answers through thinking? Which is why in stillness you find wisdom, not through thinking. People, somebody mentioned this, you think about something, like a satellite which circles the earth, but never actually touches the earth. It's about, around something, it never actually goes directly to the point. Thinking, it just goes round and round and round. It never actually gets to the heart of things. To get to the heart of things, you have to be still, and experience, and be there. Which is why, when you talk to one another, how many people know how to listen? How many people have communication problems? How many people in your relationship, in your home, they just don't listen to you, do they? And you don't listen to them as well. You don't know how to listen. If you want to listen to someone, you've got to be still. So no mind doesn't move. It doesn't think. It doesn't try to remember what they're saying. You have this wonderful thing I call total listening. When someone's in front of you, you allow what they say to be completely absorbed. And you don't have like a counter conversation going on in your head. Which is why many people don't listen. Your wife might be saying something, and you're thinking, here she goes again, how many times do I have to hear this? And if she is wrong, this is not what happens. As soon as I get a chance, I'm going to tell her something else. A lot of times when one person is talking, the other one is thinking. There's no communication happens. To totally listen, when someone is talking to you, you completely are quiet inside. Just like you were just then. Totally aware and listening. You're picking up things. It's a silence of the mind, a stillness. Now, many people who learn this technique of total listening, when they are still at school, have a great time getting top grades. It's amazing why people don't teach their kids this. When that teacher is talking to you, shut up. Listen with everything you've got. So you have no thoughts inside. It'll be just like a dry sponge who just soaks everything in. Again, you know, because, you know, my past lives and stuff, and obviously a monk in previous lives, that's one of the reasons I did well at school. I had incredible memory. And the reason was because I knew how to listen, even as a young boy. And so that we get exams come along, and you've got a question there, you remember, even when the teacher told you that. You've got a clear acceptance of what's being said, because when they're saying, you're not thinking. You're silent inside. Imagine if you do that with your partner. You'll be able to understand what your partner's saying, where they're coming from. Your ability to communicate will be increased enormously for the happiness of your relationship. If you're in business, well, no, everyone's got a job. You'll be able to listen to your suppliers, to your clients, to your bosses, to the people who work for you. You'll be able to listen to them, feel them, understand them. Because you can listen in silence. Not only that, but silence gives you power. There's one thing which is a basic teaching of meditation. If you want to have a healthy body, you have to exercise it. But if you want to have a healthy mind or other powerful mind, you have to learn how to keep it still. The more still you are, the more power you feel inside. This is a great, wonderful thing in meditation. Whenever I get tired, if I have the chance, that's why today I've started a new regime. From 6 to 7, I'm not going out to talk to anybody. I'm going in my room to meditate. Because that gives me more power, more energy. So when I give a talk to all these people who listen to this on the internet, you get a far better talk. Because I've got an energy source. I love getting into that energy. So I've been meditating for such a long time now. I know how to find energy when you're really, really tired. Well, the last time I did that, over in Singapore, when was that, January or something? Or forget now, when we were doing this concert over there, it was in January. And they had this double concert, which, I don't sing or anything. I'm very compassionate. If I tried to sing, that would be so cruel to other people listening. So instead of doing that, I just would come on the stage just to say a few stories, acting as myself. But I remember they had these two plays. After one play, I just was so tired. I think I had a headache. And everyone else was going to get their lunch. And I looked around this theatre in the Raffles Hotel in Singapore for a nice quiet place. It was one of these emergency exits, and the exit was locked on one side. So it was like a dead end. It was great. I closed the door. It's like a little cave in the theatre in the Raffles Hotel, centre of Singapore. And I just sat there. Sat there just for maybe about half an hour. And all your tiredness disappears. Look at the energy coming up. You're full of this power of stillness. You can only do this when you're still. You stop thinking. You're at peace. peace is like I try to evoke in the great cathedrals when nothing moves, in the middle of the Australian bush, where there's not a rustle, no sound of a bird or any living being. It's silent, deep silence. Or you can access that in meditation. That enlivens you, inspires you. The sacred silence gives you power, which means that whatever you do in life, you can be incredibly effective and successful. You've got the power, and you can see deeply. Because your awareness, your mind is strong and empowered, of course you can actually find solutions to problems. You can see the way through things, because you can see more deeply than other people. Your mind is empowered. You know what most of our minds are like? They're just so worn out, so tired. Why? Because you've been trying to solve problems by thinking too much. You've been losing sleep worrying so much. You know, you've got things to worry about. These are problems, but it's the way you find solutions. That's the problem. You're not finding solutions in a wise way. Instead of thinking about it, we sit still. If there's no solution, it's not a problem. Shut up. Stop worrying. Be still. And with a powerful mind, then you can find the solutions. That's why it's not just that this peace is the highest happiness, but the peace is also the solution. The solution to the problems of life. That's why peace is the highest happiness. And why there's a huge difference between peace and happiness. Happiness comes and goes, but peace is always there for you to turn to at any moment in your life, especially your last moment. If you want to become enlightened and not get reborn into this world again, learn what peace truly is. Learn how to be still, so you can stop once and for all the movement of the wheel called life and death. Da da da. That's the talk. So I hope you enjoyed the talk on the power of peace. Okay, now has anyone got any comments, questions or complaints about tonight's talk? Wow, that's quick. Yeah. Off you go. Pain. Oh. Okay, if pain is such a great thing and so much wisdom comes from pain, why do Buddhists strive to get rid of pain? If any Buddhist strives to get rid of pain, they're a very stupid Buddhist. Because they find the pain will increase. Ah, okay, the Four Noble Truths. You don't strive to let go of pain. You don't strive to get rid of pain. You let go of striving. You let go of craving. And a wonderful thing happens when the craving disappears. Pain is. Happiness is, suffering is, but underneath it all is peace. Peace is different than happiness and suffering. Peace is when you let go of happiness and suffering and you allow it to be. You make peace with suffering. You make peace with happiness. And the problem is gone. So striving to get rid of suffering, that just makes you more tense. Arguing with life just makes life a problem. That's actually, it was a joke which I meant to say today. Today's real joke about arguing. About this man, he was 90 years of age on his birthday, still very fit and healthy. And they was interviewed in the newspapers. 90 years of age and you're still fit and healthy. What's the secret of your fitness and health and long life? He said, because I never argued with anyone all my life. And the interviewer said, that can't be right. And he said, I think I agree with you. Okay, that's a joke for tonight. So I don't know if I answered your question. Could you ask a very deep question? So maybe, you know, that's a whole talk for another time. But if you want to come up and ask, is that okay for tonight? Yeah. Okay. Any other question anyone has to ask? Yeah, okay. Yeah. Yep. How does that fit with karma? You say that sometimes when things go wrong in life, instead of thinking, oh, it's my fault, why did this happen to me, and beating yourself up about it, how does that fit in with like the law of karma? And actually, it's indeed, as long as, actually, this law of karma is an interesting thing, but as long as you think that there's a self in here which is responsible for all these things, you actually make more karma all over again. There is something called the end of karma. Now, the ending of all karma, of all this doing and being responsible for things. Because sometimes, you know what it is, it's like the karma, you make good karma, you make bad karma. There's no human being in this whole world, you know, who just makes good karma. You know, we all make some bad karma. I do too. Dalai Lama, he makes bad karma too sometimes. But sometimes this good karma and bad karma business, can we end all of this karma business? You can. When you have this idea that you're in control of things, that you're the creator and maker, then you're caught in karma. And that's actually, it's a wonderful way of looking at life. It explains many things. But there's also the end of karma. And that's when you completely let go. When you disappear. When you stop fighting the world. Then you don't make karma anymore. That's where the buck stops. Otherwise the buck keeps on going round and round and round and round and round. Yeah, for most people, karma is just explains the happiness and suffering of life. This is going that one step beyond the happiness and suffering. The ending of karma by the ending of the self which makes the karma. The letting go of the controller. Disappearing. Because that's what happens when you're in the silence. You disappear in the silence. In the middle of the bush. Wonderful feeling when it's so silent. When nothing moves, you also vanish. That's why I'm like one with all things. It's not you anymore. You merged. The end of you. And that's the end of karma. And the end of suffering. Peace at last. You are the one who makes the noise. Da da da. Okay, thank you for those questions and those answers, which will not answer your question, because only when you touch the peace and the stillness, then the question becomes answered. But out of respect for the wonderful questions, I answered on that sort of level. Okay, so thank you for listening to this evening's talk. There's another one coming next week. Until you become enlightened, when you don't have to come again, you can stay at home and enjoy yourself. But those of you not enlightened, another talk, another time, next week.
Arahaṁ sammā sambuddho bhagavā buddhaṁ bhagavantaṁ abhivādhemi suvākato bhagavata dhammo dhammaṁ namassāmi. Sutupatthipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sanghaṃ Namāmi.